And we are live on Blog Talk Radio for Falcon Zone. I'm your host, Jeremy the Impact York. We got the band all back together. Today, of course, we are finally joined by the coach, Haywood Hill. How you doing, coach?
I'm doing great, Jeremy. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. And, of course, the King AC Alien is back all the way from the other coast. How you doing, Reggie?
I'm doing good, Jeremy. How are you? Hey, coach.
Hi, Reggie.
Yeah, it's probably been a good while since you guys have even seen each other, right?
Actually, yeah, it had. Well, it's been a while since we hung out, yeah. We've been saying we need to do more of that.
Yes, absolutely.
But tons we got to get into, so I'm going to just jump right into this because we're going to try to fly through this. I think we all have to jet pretty quickly here to other things. You know, let's jump right into it. Sam Bradford made his debut with the Minnesota Vikings, Monday night. And to me, this just proves what happens when a kid with talent gets surrounded with talent and a team that believes in him. Did you guys see pretty much the same thing?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to see much of the game, but I saw the highlights. And, yeah, I mean, I think he still had that in St. Louis, right? But maybe it was injuries that was causing him. Same thing was dealing with him he was dealing with in Oklahoma. So, yeah, I mean, it's good to finally see him get somewhere where he's actually proven the worth of the pick that he was selected. So, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that sometimes it's just a change of an environment. And one of the things I like to use in coaching, and we say it oftentimes, you have to change your playground, your playmate, and your play things. And I think going to Minnesota was a breath of fresh air for him. It gives him an opportunity to be around a different environment. And now he can kind of just step right into it. And it helps to have, at that time, to have an Adrian Peterson and have the talent that he has around him healthy. I think it also helps as well.
Well, since you mentioned that, we'll jump right into that other topic as well. He kind of really didn't have Adrian Peterson. He's, as part of the injuries as we get into it here, it's kind of the Price is Right, come on down moment as all these stars have gotten injured and their replacements are going to have to step up pretty quickly. Adrian Peterson tore his meniscus from what I heard, but I've also heard MCL, everything but an LCL apparently. Either way, I think we all agree he's done for the year. So, come on down, Jerick McKinnon and Matt Asiata, who disappeared from every fantasy league I'm in early this week. I was able to pick them up. But, what do you guys think moving forward? Was this something that kind of needed to happen as far as the Vikings being able to move on, or are they going to kind of pay for this one?
I think that it's time for them to, I think AP comes back from it, obviously. Because he's just that type of guy, and I think he keeps his body in well enough shape that he can rebound like he has done in the past. But I think, he's definitely getting up there in age, and it's probably time for him, Minnesota, to start taking a look at who the next replacement is going to be. I think I know it's not those people that they have that you just mentioned. So, I think it's time.
I agree. I think that at this point, Minnesota has looked at this situation and weighing heavily in on their options. I think Adrian did an excellent job in coming back. But I think now, with the knees, and I don't know if it's the same knee that he's torn that was surgically repaired or if this is the other side. Normally, when one goes, it's not too long after that, the other one will follow behind because there's a lot of overcompensation in your rehab with one leg being stronger than the other. But with that being said, I know that, business moves have to be made. Again, it's a business decision that Minnesota has to make. And then, most importantly, they have to look at how it's going to hit their salary cap as far as his salary is concerned and the contract. So I'm sure that they are beginning to, sit down and put the pieces and the parts together to make a decision on the future of Mr. Peterson with their organization.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree that I actually thought maybe preseason they should have tried to see what kind of value they could get in moving on from him because I felt like he was a liability at this point. I hated to be right on that. But yeah, it's probably not Matt Asiata, and it's not Jerick McKinnon, I believe, former Georgia Tech Yellow Jacket Jerick McKinnon. But I mean, who knows?
I don't know that name.
Maybe they make a power play for Leonard Fournette during the next draft. But really, in the system that they run there, I don't see them having to have a power back like this. They could probably make a committee work for a little while, but, I mean, just maybe they can finagle Coleman or Freeman away from Atlanta.
Well, I wouldn't say they don't need a power back. Let's not get too happy about Mr. Bradford there. I mean, he's been – quite a few places and kind of failed. You know, hopefully he's not fool's gold, but I mean, everything's got to start with a run game. And Mike Zimmer's that type of coach. He has a little bit of smash mouth in him as well. So I don't think they'll completely get away from the power back. But yeah, you're right. They definitely need to. I mean, and even Coleman or Freeman would help. I don't know that Atlanta would give up either one of them though.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if they'll do that. If they do, they're going to shop at a high price because they know that there's a need there, and they do have a surplus. But if they try to come at Atlanta with a deal like that, it's gonna cost them, you know, in some draft picks to get those other guys because they're not going to be so quick to come off their 1-2 punch knowing what they're up against. So, you know, and possible injuries. So I can very well see that if they try to pitch it to Atlanta, it's going to cost them heavily to make that deal.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll really say on this as far as that deal, you got to think about the better that Bradford plays when Bridgewater comes back. They're going to be able to keep one of those and flip the other one for a first or second round pick. So it just makes that deal that much better. And if you flip him for a first round pick, most people will gladly give up a number one for somebody they already know about.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. I just don't think you'll get a first or a second rounder for Sam Bradford. Not at this point.
No, I agree. I don't see him as a first or a second. I can see maybe 2 4s for him, or maybe 2 5s and a 4, but I don't see anything above a 3 market value wise right now.
Yeah, probably true. Next injury we want to get to, Jonathan Stewart has a hamstring injury where he's going to miss 1 to 2 weeks or so. Behind Cam Newton, I believe, is it Forrest Whitaker? No, he's an actor, I think.
No, you're thinking about, I see his name right now. I see his name now. I actually remember him. He played last year quite a bit when Stewart went down as well.
Stewart's actually looking good.
Had him earn his job. Have him earn his money, Jeremy.
I was about to say, from the looks of it, the stat guy / producer is previewing possibly the starting quarterback for your Atlanta Falcons in the next couple of years. So I'm going to have to get the TV remote out of his hand.
Oh, yeah. I was supposed to be down there, but I didn't make the trip. But that being said, Carolina now is an example of a team that, you know, I think they should – you know, they've been probably needing to find a back since they had, I believe, Stewart and D'Angelo Williams, even though Williams is burning it up in Pittsburgh right now. But they are an example of a team that doesn't necessarily have to have a premier back, considering the way Cam Newton kind of is kind of that run and gun type of quarterback. So you're going to get the best of both worlds with him. And with Kelvin Benjamin back and Funches, I mean, those guys kind of got it clicking right now. And Greg Olsen, let's not forget him. I'm always amazed how wide open that guy gets. But they are an example of a team that doesn't have to panic that Stewart's
right.
gone. I think they can hold it, you know, toe the line long enough for Stewart to make his return.
Yeah, I agree. I think that they have enough in their arsenal that they can get by with it. It's not like the quarterback position for them in Carolina where if they lose Cam, then they lose everything. I think that they have enough there in their offense and the way they spread things around that they can take pressure off that position. Olsen is playing really well right now for them. Their receivers are really stepping up and doing some things. So I think they have enough there right now to toe the line as long as the injury can be cleared up. And it's not one that's sustainable for the course of the season. With hamstrings, they're very tricky.
because it doesn't take much to tweak him, and he's at a position where he really can't rest it. There's no way he can rest the hamstring other than, you know, taking some time off that way. But when you're in the game, it's just full tilt. And so, again, I think it's going to be something he's going to have to deal with throughout the whole season. But it just depends on how severe the tweak is, and as he's moving through his rehab with that, how well they can keep it under control and get some productivity out of him as well.
And our stat guy didn't beat me to the punch. I found out it is Fozzie Whitaker.
Ah, yeah, that's the guy. I couldn't remember what the first name was, but he came in and helped out a little bit when Stewart got hurt last year.
Exactly. And this next guy is actually, I wouldn't say one of my favorites, but I like the guy a lot. Danny Woodhead tore his ACL. He is by far Mr. Swiss Army Knife, any team he happens to go to. I'm surprised New England let him go. But, I mean, everything started on that offense. It started and ended with Danny Woodhead. I hated to see him go down like that. Now they're really expecting the recently signed Dexter McCluster and Melvin Gordon to really pick up the slack. Can they pick up the slack for what Danny Woodhead does?
I think so. Woodhead, I mean, why did they let him go to New England? For just this reason. I mean, his durability has always been kind of in question. Same with Wes Welker. Same with a lot of those gadget guys, right? I mean, when they're in, and they're doing and they're producing. But when they're hurt, they're gone, right? And you're gonna expect them to get scratched up once or twice every year. Seems like that guy's always hurt. So, yeah, I think they'll be fine. It's time for Melvin Gordon to step up and show, you know, why he was picked as high as he was, first rounder, and do some of the things he was doing out of Wisconsin, I believe he came out of. It's time for him to show his worth now.
And that's the whole idea, you know, with the draft picks, they most definitely give them time to kind of make their own bed, if you will, for the lack of better terms. It gives them an opportunity to get a little comfortable with the system. And now, just like you said earlier, Reggie, that now the time has come to kind of earn his keep, if you will, with New England. If you know New England is a very conservative team. And they don't make moves unless those moves most definitely need to be made. So, again, I think that they have enough right now, and they have to see where they are with their draft picks and if those picks were the right picks. But now they have to just earn their money. And I think that's where the coach is with this now. It's next man up for him.
Absolutely. And, you know, I may just start – if this many people keep getting injured each and every week, we'll just start calling the segment Come On Down. And next up, DeMarcus Ware fractured his forearm. He's going to need surgery. He's going to be out 4 to 5 weeks. So I'm going to say this tagline, and you guys feel free to chime in if you know it or if you want to make a guess. If DeMarcus Ware is out, come on down.
Von Miller. That's all they need, really. I can't think. Who else do they have on that defensive end? Not Corey Bierman. Don't say that.
No, there's a guy that plays behind DeMarcus Ware. I'm seeing if you guys can remember.
No, I don't know. I don't know who's
behind. I don't remember.
It would be I don't think it's his. It may be his first year. It's his first or second year. Come on down, Shane Ray.
Oh, okay. Really? That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
That's right. Okay.
Yep.
Well, I mean, he should be ready to go. He should be ready to go. That's why they drafted him that high for this specific position here. I mean, you're not going to supplant somebody like DeMarcus Ware because you got to play the money.
Right.
But it is time. It's time for him to show his worth.
Right. And that's the one thing about these rookie contracts. You know, if you guys remember, I told you about two, three years ago, veterans won't be that old anymore. You know, I mean, a veteran now will be about 7 years. Because the rookie contracts are 3 to 4 years. So by the time they come out of their rookie contract and begin to, you know, kind of earn, they're earning that only some, for some of them, the only other contract that you're going to get before it's over for them. So now they have with the way the rookie contract is structured, it gives them more time now to prepare that player versus rushing a guy that they just drafted and plugging and playing him, okay? And that's one of the things that you'll see with these kind of players. I mean, now if you notice, some of the ones played, some of the ones didn't play in some organizations, or they didn't see a lot of time because they didn't feel that they were ready. So now when you get to year two, they're expecting to see some significant time. By the time you get to year three, you should be a starter. And so now, you know, where is that a point where, you know, he's getting a little long in the tooth, and they knew what they were drafting, a player similar in style and ability, and now he needs to step up and just flat out play. I mean, that's what happens when your number gets called. It's time you have to answer the call.
Absolutely, and that leads us to the one of the hottest injury news stories of the week. Jimmy Garoppolo sprains his AC joint and actually didn't finish the game. So in the worst-kept secret of the week, come on down.
Gosh, and I can't even think of the kid's name now. I can see his face. Oh, I can see his face. I can't get his name. Oh, Jacoby Brissett. That's his name.
Yep. Jacoby Brissett. It was just handed down a few minutes ago. I saw the Adam Schefter message that Garoppolo is out, Brissett's going to start, and Gronk is actually going to play for the first time this year.
Yeah, he's going to need Gronk tonight. But even though, you know what, again, I also saw a segment a little bit earlier today, or was it yesterday, where it was on Inside the NFL with Michael Irving said, listen, If this man comes out and wins this game with a third-string quarterback, I mean, you might as well take the name Lombardi off the trophy and put Belichick. I mean, at this point,
right?
That's just coaching genius, right? But I think he can pull it off. I mean, I know Houston has the great defense, but again, and I think, Coach, you and I were talking about this, and maybe somebody else was talking. I mean, at the end of the day, he's just got to hold it down for two more games, right? And then the golden boy comes back, and all is well with the universe. So, but, you know, here's a chance for New England to showcase another player. We talk about this player. This kid's 6'4", 235, I mean, 240 pounds or whatever. He's a big kid with a great arm. He played really well at NC State. And, listen, this kid's going to – I think he's going to have a pretty decent career, whether it's in New England or not. But I believe him and Garoppolo are playing for that, for the next man up when Brady decides to make a walk or take a walk.
Do I think New England wins? Yes. Why do I think New England wins? Because they are one of the teams that thoroughly prepares their players. And the secret sauce to New England is that no one is underprepared to go in the game. They prepare them all as if they're going to play. So the thing with this is, I think what you'll see tonight in New England, I feel New England wins it because they're playing at home. I think they have a simplified offense for him. They're going to have him take a high percentage passes as far as a lot of outs, mm-hmm. things to Gronk. I mean, I can see that. They have enough in their running game. And the key to New England is, as you can see, when they have injuries, they don't panic. They have never panicked with a major injury. They didn't panic when Brady was out. I mean, they fought for him naturally. But, again, at the end of the day, they're still winning football games. And that says a lot about what they're able to do. So the organization, and when I speak of the organization, as not just from the coaching staff but from the players internally, they all know what they have to step up in these areas. They're going to make this guy feel very comfortable out there on the field. They're going to respect him as the leader in the huddle. And they're going to go down the field and do the things that New England has always done. I mean, I don't think you're going to see any drop-off, really. I think you're going to see – actually, I think what you're going to see is a kid that's going to throw the ball like a young Brady. So be prepared to see that. I think it's going to be very entertaining tonight. I don't think Houston has enough defensively to stop them. I don't. And then when the injuries come, and you'll have a few, I don't know if Houston's roster can fulfill the demand of a offense that New England can produce.
Well, and since, having Coach back on right here, Reggie, I don't know if you've noticed, but he's better at these segues than I am. Let's go right to our picks. We'll start with Houston at New England. So, Coach, you got New England?
Right.
Absolutely, New England. I think it's going to be a very good football game. I think it'll be a tight football game. But I think New England, at the end of the day, watch the third quarter, guys. I think the third quarter is going to determine how the game flows.
All right, Reggie, who do you have in that?
Same here, New England. I think they're at home. That gives them the advantage.
Yeah, and I don't think we have to do much more than hit this little button here.
Oh, it's funny because it's true.
Yeah, it's a sweep. I do agree with Coach that you're going to see kind of a mini Brady out of Brissett. It's going to be very it's going to almost be – I call it Kevin Cobb football, but Alex Smith made a career out of it too. A lot of dunk and dink. He can take some shots if he needs to. He's got all four running backs ready to go. Who knows which two, three, four of them will play. If it all starts going south and Jadeveon Clowney actually, you know, gets in the backfield and puts him on the turf, Julian Edelman can still throw. He threw all throughout college, and he's the backup tonight. So I just hope I get the fantasy points when Edelman throws.
Wow.
I have him on, like, two different teams, so that would be – you know, fantabulous if I can get all those points there. But that's fantasy, and since me and you, Reggie, aren't playing each other this week, we won't bore anybody else with the league.
All right.
Next game, we got Detroit at Green Bay. Who do you have, Reggie?
I'm going to go Green Bay. I think they're sick and tired of hearing what the media has to say about where's their offense. I think Aaron Rodgers goes off. It's at Green Bay. It's at home. I think Green Bay.
All right. And then what could possibly be? I was about to say, I'm not sure that we could say 100%, but 99%, I think we know where you're
yes,
at, Coach.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I think I agree with Reggie. I think that Aaron, watch him throw – he is going to be all over the place with precision. He's going to look like a surgeon on the field. He is going to slice, dice, and you're going to see a fire in him that I have seen on a number of occasions where he is a ninja. He's going to go out there and he is going to be a silent killer in that game. Trust me, I'm going to tell you.
I usually do trust what Coach tells me, and you as well, Reggie, because typically you're right, but I don't know. I've counted Detroit out for so long. I feel like for some reason Matt Stafford is just going to turn this into an air attack, and I got Detroit in this game.
All right.
Sucks to be you.
Right.
Wow, I'm gonna have to get the sound guy to cut. I'm gonna start using that as a sound bite. That's gonna be a good one there.
I think Reggie will agree. Jeremy. I think Reggie will agree. Until you experience Lambeau, you have no idea. The attitude that they have up there, and they are some professional sore losers. But trust me, the demand on that team and that experience and that environment. Is nothing to play with, and after the loss with Minnesota, they are coming back, and they trust me. All week, all they have heard is exactly what you guys are talking about, and it's a small city. So all week they have not been able to hide from the comments. So it's not just that they're feeding into the fan frenzy. There is an expectation in Green Bay, and when you walk into that stadium, you feel that expectation. You know that expectation. I guess it would be no different if you were in the, Boston and at the Garden, New York at the Garden, or Boston with the Celtics. When you're on that parquet floor, it is an expectation that is there, and Reggie can vouch for that expectation.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I will just to throw out the other homer in me. I will say. Michigan at the Big House, if you want a good example there. But it's nothing personal, but I heard Colin Cowherd say this, and he made such a good case that I actually started looking it up as Aaron Rodgers, for some reason, just doesn't come up big in big games. I think the last time he came up big in a big moment was when he got Olivia Munn to take a second date with him.
Wow.
I guess I will. I would have to correct that by saying, if you remember, it was a third. If I'm not mistaken, it was a Thursday night game. They were playing Detroit, and he threw that Hail Mary pass, which has been all over TV for quite some time.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
He is
the king of the Hail Mary pass. I'll give him that.
Correct. And that kind of put them to bed. So expect that game to be similar, but this time he will waste no time and get to that point.
Last thing I'll say is I agree with a lot of other analysts that they should actually put that Hail Mary 50-yard pass into their playbook as a regular play and not just a special moment, because they do it better than anybody. But next game, we got Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. And as much as I can go on and on about I like the mechanics and overall play of Carson Wentz, I just think there's too much firepower on offense for Pittsburgh. I think Big Ben's taking another win home. Coach, who do you got?
Pittsburgh.
Reggie?
Same here, Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh pulls it. I know Carson Wentz.
It's funny because it's true.
And that went off by itself. That was really weird.
On cue? Apparently, or are you going Philadelphia and Carson Wentz?
Oh, no, no. It's Pittsburgh all the way.
Okay.
I like Carson Wentz. Yeah, it's only been a game or so, but I rewatched that game from the other night. I watched his mechanics because it's kind of like Coach said, and like you said as well, Reggie, when you watch something so much, you start to learn what to look for. And from other people like you guys, I've learned to look for certain things. I like his size. I like his decision-making. He's young. He's going to make a few mistakes here and there. He's on a team that's not supposed to be winning, and yet Philadelphia looks pretty good when he's in charge.
Yeah, but I can tell you what, and Pittsburgh's going to teach him this in this game. He does not go down, and he does not go out of bounds.
No.
And he's played a couple of teams before where he's been able to get away with that. But I promise you, if James Harrison catches him coming around that corner and refusing to go down, he's going to be out for the season. I mean, that's my only concern. Is they've got to tell that kid to get out of bounds.
Yeah, if he's not going to learn to slide, he's got to get out of bounds or he's going to be another RG3 or something. So I do agree there. And, of course, our last game, which we are lucky enough to be able to watch all by itself on Monday night, Monday Night Football from New Orleans, where I would imagine Reggie will be heading as soon as this is over. The Atlanta Falcons.
Absolutely.
Versus the New Orleans Saints. I still have to ask, Reggie, who do you have in this?
You already know. I'm going ATL all the way, baby. We're on a roll. We're hot off of an unexpected win in Oakland. New Orleans doesn't have much of a defense. As a matter of fact, I think one of their big cornerbacks went out this week.
Yeah.
We re-sign, and we'll talk a little bit later about re-signing Schofield so they get to move Beasley back at the defensive end spot. So I think this is one that we're going to surprise them, folks.
Coach, who do you have?
I don't think that it's going to be a surprise, actually, Reggie. I think that this is the game where Matt Ryan makes his statement or has to make his statement. I think that the team as a whole goes in with a certain type of energy because they know the type of energy that is necessary to win in New Orleans or whenever they play in New Orleans. So I think this is – what I'm interested to see, excuse me, guys, is how does Matt Ryan come into this game and take control? Not just because it's New Orleans, but that helps. But I am watching – I am really going to be looking to see in his eyes and in his play, does he take control? Does he command the offense at this point? Not just demand that things happen, but command with the demand. And that's what I'm going to be looking for. And hopefully he will do what I think he's going to do, and I think he's going to come in with that on his mind. Now, would that carry the week after? Who knows? But I think I need to see that fire in his eye. I need to see that he's going out to win this game and not just competing this game. So I'll give it to Atlanta.
All right. So it looks like we only had, two homer picks in this, because I got this turning into a score fest. Atlanta's defense has been okay. They're a lot better than New Orleans, who I think just dresses 11 guys and tells them to go stand out there. But I think this comes down to a Georgia State, former Georgia State kicker, Will Lutz, field goal. And I got New Orleans barely narrowing this out. I mean, I don't know how, if the over-under is 50, you should take the over in the points, because I just feel like I have no idea how high this is going to go. But I'm going New Orleans in the small upset. Now, of course, coming into this week, obviously, I'm at 4-4 because I had a disastrous week. Pretty much paralleled what did the opposite of what I did in week one. Reggie, you're down at 4-4 after a 3-1 week, and Coach, you're at 3-5 as you went 2-2 last week. So, pretty good chance I won't have the lead after this week either. But it's always fun keeping up with these, and I've actually gotten feedback. People like to hear what we're going to say.
Well, it's time for
you know, Coach.
Stepping it up.
Yeah, you know he likes to try to pull away, so I'm just going to keep it close.
Well, you guys have the same pick this week, so either way, you'll keep the. I do agree. The third quarter is going to be pivotal in pretty much all of those four games. We're going to know one way or the other.
Correct.
But real quickly, Forbes released the franchise values as of right now, and I've got the top four listed out here. Did I list it out on the sheet I sent you guys?
No, but I have read that article probably about a week or so ago. So, yeah, I was surprised at a couple of them on there. Well, one on there specifically. I didn't realize they were still as high.
Well, since you've read the article, I'll ask you, Coach. Can you name any of the top four valued franchises?
Let's see. I would say the Dallas Cowboys has
right.
to be one.
Number one.
Yep, 4.2 million.
I would have to say the Patriots are in there somewhere.
Number two, 3.4.
Number three is going to surprise
My third team, I would have to say the 49ers.
Actually, they're number four.
Okay, 49ers are four. Okay, so the third team would have to be.
And I can give you a clue if you'd
see.
Like it.
No, let me see if I can get this. I got three out of four so far. The third team out there would probably have to be the Cleveland Browns. By how close
missed
was
it
I?
By that much.
Okay.
No,
so
try the New York Giants.
Right.
I forgot about them. Yeah, I can see that.
But three out of four, that's pretty impressive. I would have only got two of these.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had I not read the article, I would have gotten two of them.
Okay,
yeah, I would
have
gotten the first two. And, yeah.
Does that add an extra credit for my picks of three?
you may give you a half credit. You now have 3.5 wins on that.
No, that's pretty right, though, as far as the marketing, you know. I can see that, yeah, that makes sense with New York, just because of where they are.
Absolutely. And we're going to try to power through these last things in the next 10 minutes or so, because I want to leave at least 15 minutes for Falcon Zone. Let's see. Eagles long snapper John Dorenbos, I believe is how you say his name, got third place on America's Got Talent for his magic act. He is actually quite good. They had him performing for John Gruden and a few others at a table before Monday night's game, and John Gruden just kept saying, that's some kind of witchcraft.
Okay. I didn't catch it. I didn't even realize they were. Was he the guy doing all the card tricks?
Yeah, he was doing card tricks. He was also on the Sunday Countdown stuff, which you were in Oakland, you may not have seen. The Sunday Countdown stuff. There's a segment with Cooper Manning.
Okay, yeah, I think I did see the card tricks before, so I think I have seen it. He was doing some really wild.
I have no idea what you just did. Yeah, he's actually quite good, because I watch a lot of magic shows. I've actually been a fan of it for years. I'm absolutely terrible at it, but I understand, I guess, talent as far as the magician level. And he's not bad. If his long snapping duties start to tail off, He might be in Vegas.
Well, I would have to safely say that teams better be careful, special team coordinator, because if he can do these cards, what's going to happen when he makes the ball disappear? You think a punt is gone, and all of a sudden, someone's around the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I didn't think about that. And then also, you know, given whatever happens with the new NHL team that's about to be in Las Vegas, if the NFL decides to go tap the Vegas market, maybe he goes and plays for them and pulls double duty.
Yeah.
And by the way, if anybody knows John Dorenbos, if he needs an agent, apparently I'll be pretty good for him. So he should just hit up the Impact here, and we'll make an impact. Right? Yeah. Conveniently, the sound guy is giving me the thumbs down. We on either my idea or the fact that we don't have that sound thing anymore. We're going to add that.
Right.
Let's see. There are four rookie quarterbacks who are starting this week. I believe only one is making his first ever start. That's Cody Kessler in Cleveland. Actually, do you guys know who's backing up Cody Kessler this week in Cleveland?
No, I do not. I didn't even know Cody Kessler was.
Yeah, because they're 2-for-2 in losing quarterbacks in consecutive weeks. So Cody Kessler's the guy they drafted in the third round or so this year, and they signed a guy that you guys might be familiar with. Touchdown Jesus is going to actually be backing him up. Not Tim Tebow. He's still playing baseball. Charlie Whitehurst is the backup in Cleveland.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Good for
not
that
that
guy,
it'll
right?
matter. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that won't matter.
Well, that means your week four starter in Cleveland is going to be touchdown Jesus Charlie Whitehurst. So.
Oh wow.
He really.
Okay.
He really hurt.
Right.
Yeah. They
need to call up Mike.
The way this is going. The way this is going. I mean, you know, I might put my name in the hat for. You know, I'll be the week 17 starter or something like that because I'll happily take league minimum to get smashed around a couple times.
Right. Yeah, let's
go. Yeah,
Give him a try.
I'm a little surprised that Vic wasn't called and his services wasn't rendered. I'm a little surprised by that because now they're really grasping for straws right now, including at that position.
Right, because the Patriots in the ultimate dog and pony show, because it's not a smoke show or screens or anything, they actually had T.J. Yates in for a tryout, and they had Sean Renfrey in for a visit. I think they're not going to sign these guys whatsoever. I think it was just to keep the media off their back and say, oh, we had some guys in.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, come on. When you're scraping the bottom of the barrel – and you're of a franchise that's already perennial losers and with a fan base that's as rabid as the Browns fans are coming off of the Cleveland Cavaliers winning it all. I mean, there's just so many tangibles there that can get you fired on your first year. Come on, Hugh Jackson, you got to be thinking better than that. I mean, Vic can at least win you some games, right? And if nothing else, he'll sell some tickets.
Right. I mean, why not get Michael Vick, like you're saying, is the starter and let Tim Tebow back him up in the ultimate, we're selling out so that we'll sell out.
And they just keep on coming.
Right? I mean, if you're not going to win games, you at least give somebody a reason to show up. Maybe have David Copperfield, since we're on the magic kick, come make maybe he can make the franchise disappear and make the fans even happier.
Yeah, no, they won't be happy about that, but they'll definitely get Hugh Jackson out of there, that's for sure. And
yep,
I think he's got a chance to turn he can turn them around, but not making personnel decisions like this.
Right, exactly. I'm going to kind of throw out three topics here, and you guys feel free to pick whichever ones you want to get into. Buffalo fired offensive coordinator Greg Roman. Randy Gregory withdrew his appeal of his 10-game ban. He's actually not available till week 15 of this year because of another suspension he has. And Drew Brees passed Dan Marino for number 3 all-time in passing yards with 61,361.
Coach, I'll let you pick. They're all pretty much on the same level, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Drew Brees, I don't really want to talk about a saint. let's pick Greg Roman gets fired. How about that?
Okay. Yeah, because I know Coach wants to weigh in on part of this. We were debating part of this before the show.
So, Coach, what were you guys debating?
Yeah, the thing was that I felt that it wasn't the offense, and I was kind of surprised when they lost that game that it was 30, you know, that they had put up 30-something points. And so with that being said, it was, I was a little shocked at the fact that they would have let go of the offensive coordinator. It wasn't the score of points that really hurt them that game. It was defense.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. It's not the offensive coordinator or Greg Roman's fault whatsoever, but kind of the theory I threw out to you is the Ryan brothers are going to be pretty close in following him out the door, but you can't fire the defensive coordinator because it's Rob Ryan, and if you fire him, then you're going to – you might as well send Rex with him. So somebody had to kind of fall on the sword, and for some goofy reason, they gave Greg Roman the greatest excuse to get off this team.
Well, yeah, he leaves the team with a bang, though. You know, being that,
right.
You know, when you look at it realistically, it wasn't an offensive issue that, I guess, led to his demise. So, again, I don't think it was an offensive thing. I don't know how long it's going to last in Buffalo, but I didn't see that being the case when the quarterback played very well up under his leadership.
Right, right. I don't think the offense was the issue. I mean, Sammy Watkins being hurt a lot. The only thing I can say with Roman is he didn't seemingly find McCoy in the offense as much as maybe he probably should. You got one of the top running backs in the league. You should be able to do a little bit something more with McCoy than what's going on. But definitely the Ryan-led defenses have shown to not be that great since Ryan's been there. So I think they may need to go back to the drawing board on that.
Absolutely. And the thing I wanted to say about the Randy Gregory withdrawing his appeal, there's a reason why he withdrew his appeal of the 10-game ban, which, like I said, on top of the 4-game suspension he was already going to get, he's not eligible until week 15. I think the silence is a no. Am I correct in that?
Uh-oh. I'm talking on mute. I was wondering, there had to be something for him to kind of decide that he was gonna back out of that and just accept it. But I hadn't heard exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah. The reason is the Players Association told him they didn't think he really had much of a case. And if the Players Association is not going to stand behind you with something like an appeal, then it's pretty much not worth your time. So he just withdrew his appeal.
That would make sense.
I concur.
That would make sense.
And
no need.
Exactly. And the last couple things, Lady Gaga is actually going to perform the halftime show of Super Bowl 51. She did the national anthem last year. She's actually a pretty good performer. Although here lately, the best thing she's done was a duet with Tony Bennett. Yeah, that Tony Bennett that sang for possibly Our Parents, even, which is kind of cool. But, I mean, if you're not going to have a big spectacle, I hope she gives us a heads up so that we know we can make a nacho run during halftime.
Right. I was going to say, I don't get that. There's so many performers out there that are better served than her. That's an interesting pick. Interesting choice, because you're right. She hasn't been relevant in a few years.
Right. I mean, maybe that's why she's trying to make a resurgence or something like that. I mean, the two names that come off the top of my head that I was debating with Cody last week that was on from 95.7, the game over in California, I said, why wouldn't Adele want to do this, or why wouldn't Taylor Swift want to do this? To me, that's two people that, I mean, even if Adele sat there and sang for 10 minutes, people aren't going to get up from their TVs and they're not going to turn the channel.
Yeah, but Adele will put you to sleep, man, for a halftime show.
That's true.
I don't know.
What if we put a kaleidoscope behind her?
No, I got it. I must say, I have the opportunity to see her at the United Center a couple of months ago, and I can't say I'm a huge fan of her music, but
mm-hmm.
it was sleepy time.
Well, she can sing though, but yeah, I agree. It's just sing with her. It's not a big circus show or anything.
No, absolutely not.
But
how the mighty have fallen. That's all I can say. I mean,
Super Bowl
show is a show that gives you a world's platform. And again, this is no knock against Lady Gaga. I think she's done a phenomenal job with her career. However, I only have one question, guys, because I don't follow her or keep up with her musically like that. What was the last thing that she put out most recently that, you know, normally when you do the Super Bowl, you have a song or you have an album or you have something out where people are following that, you know, that trend of music or that genre of music at that time that people can relate to. I don't know what she's done lately, and please forgive me if I'm mistaken. I don't know what her song is going to be for the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know what her smash hit is right now.
And that's
so.
That's just it.
Right.
I'll tell you what, though. I wouldn't have mind seeing Bruno Mars again. I was fairly impressed with his halftime show, I must say.
Yes. There's a lot of people I think they could pick. But, you know, more power to her. Maybe she's about to release something between now and then. But I guess we'll just move on to the last topic real quick. The Seattle Seahawks have lost a fifth-round pick in 2017. The first week of OTA practices next year, and the team and head coach Pete Carroll have all been fined for off-season violations. This is the second time they have been caught doing this, rather. And from what I gather, there was too much contact, too much physicality during a handful of these practices that were, thanks to the CBA, not supposed to be.
Well, all I would say is it's pretty reminiscent of Pete Carroll's days at USC, right?
Right.
I mean, so, hey, is anybody really surprised?
Can't say that I am, honestly.
Do they win?
Exactly.
I guess that's the only comment that I have. At the end of the day, do they win? So, obviously,
yep,
the fine doesn't – New England go through something like that once before. They were, you know, being, you know. So again, I guess the question I have to ask is at the end of the day, risk and reward. You know, which one do you pick?
Right.
And so, what do you call too physical? What's deemed too physical? You know, they're football players. I mean, you know, what's deemed too physical? I mean,
You know, at one point, Pete Carroll was trying to calm him down because he always pushes, you know, that competition mentality. And he even took the helmets off the guys for a couple of days trying to go lighten up. And I think there was a couple concussions or a couple of people got really hurt, something like that, to where all of a sudden the NFL, you know, it's like a shark that sees the blood in the water. All of a sudden looks up and goes, hey, what's that over there?
I mean, but they're football players. That's what I'm saying. Even if he took the helmets off, how was he going to control at the snap of the ball or a drill what they were doing? I mean, you take the helmets off, that pretty much should have told you at that moment. I mean, at this point, they shouldn't have had nothing but T-shirts and shorts. So, I mean, they're football players. I mean, I think what I'm trying to say here in the defense of Coach Carroll is, and I've been there, It's hard to turn a switch off when they cross over onto the field. Because for years they've been told, once you step on this field, then you go to work, whatever that work may be. You know, so if that's the case, just get rid of OTAs. But, I mean, they're football players. That's all I can say. I mean, that goes on every practice. I'll give an example of what happened to me when I was in Toronto, guys. These two guys, both of them played at Mississippi State. One guy is named Anthony Davis. The other guy is
Charlie. I can't get Charlie's last name up right now. But anyway, they were competing, and Charlie goes out for a pass. AB covers him on this pass, and I'm about 5 yards at a pull-up from a metal infrastructure beam inside of this building, okay, an indoor facility. And my responsibility was to blow the players off at the 5 yards from this beam so that way they could gather themselves, okay? They could see the split. So the quarterback throws the ball up. It's a go route. And Charlie's, I'm going to catch this ball. AD, no, you're not going to catch this ball. So they're running, and I'm blowing the whistle, okay, because I'm seeing they're coming way too fast to pull up. So I blow them 10 yards, 12 yards off of the warning, okay? At this point, they fly past me, and they both hit the beam. Now, mind you, we do have protective curtains that are pulled down. So they run through the protective curtain in the split of the – and all you hear is this big bong sound. And we run behind there, and they have split the beam. Both of them are knocked out, completely cold. And we have to call for medical, you know, medical services. They're there. They run over to them. We thinking, I don't know if they're dead or not. We just don't even know. So now at this point, the head coach is livid. He's screaming and hollering, Hill, you should have, did you blow it? Coach, I'm blowing the whistle at 12 yards. I thought they were coming too fast. And that's validated by other coaches and other players. Like, no, coach was blowing the whistle. They just kept running. And so when they finally brought them to, Charlie looks over at AD and tells him with the ball. He catches the ball. So he said, I told you I was going to catch that football. So that's what I mean by football players. There's something in their minds that you have to learn how to switch off, but they don't know how to switch it off when they're on the field. They just don't know how to switch that thing off. So I don't know. OTAs, I mean, I don't know what you say about it. Either get rid of OTAs or you have to let them be football players to a certain degree.
Exactly. I agree with that. Either let them play football or tell them not to, one or the other.
Right.
But as we move on into our Falcons exclusive coverage here, let's see. You know, we'll talk a little bit about the win over Oakland, 35-28. I thought it was a pretty solid game and everything. But first, Reggie, I wanted to hear a little bit about your Oakland trip because you not only survived it, but I saw you early on a tailgate picture, and you were actually supporting Falcons wearing their gear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. First of all, the stadium is the fans are not what they've been depicted to be. It's always kind of been touted as this, oh, my God, don't go there. They fight each other, they this, they that. It's not. It's they're like any other stadium. I got booed a lot. Which I expected, but by and large, it was a fairly great time. I sat probably about 3 or 4 sections away from the black hole, so I was there where I could actually see what was going on over there. Now that may have been a much different experience with Falcons gear on, and I wasn't gonna brave that one.
Right.
But by and large, I mean they're passionate rabbit fans. Their tailgating is great. Have some guys bring some of their some food up and offer it, and we had a good time. I mean, it was just friendly jabbing back and forth. So, again, great stadium, great fans. You know, hopefully they get to keep the Raiders there because you can't really say anything else other than, hell, the Los Angeles Raiders didn't sound good. So no. I don't think anything other than Oakland Raiders would make sense, but it was a great time, and again, I'm glad to be able to cross that one off my list. And it was even better, obviously, that we walked away with a win. I didn't throw it
definitely
in their faces on my way out. I kept it pretty docile because they
maybe you did
happy
from the safety of the car, right?
Right, from the safety of SFO on the plane.
Yeah, under your breath,
no,
with
time.
Your hand over your mouth. And
right. It
yeah,
was a great time.
I felt like, I don't know if it's necessarily a signature win, but I felt like for them to go over there in a game that nobody really had them winning, and I absolutely thought they were not going to do very well. They kind of exposed some of the difficulties Oakland is having this year, and the fact that Oakland was only within 7 points says a lot about their team, but I'm going to give all the credit to Atlanta here. Their offense looked really good. The run was balanced by the – basically what it seemed like they were wanting to do was to either get one of the running backs out of the – whether with a run or with a short pass, get them out and into space, and they were just attacking up the middle with the tight ends, up the seams. If they're going to continue to do that and just use Julio as a home run type deal, I'm good with that. And then you had Weems, who was the special team star all day. And,
yeah,
I mean, the defense
time.
Has issues, but there's still no pass rush. But they kind of didn't need it all that much. They were pretty good in coverage.
Well, a couple of things. And, you guys know I always give the $100 million guy a hard time. But
sure.
A couple of things I did notice, especially when I came back on the playback and watched it after I got back. He had some off-season workouts with some pitchers, and I think we talked about this in some of the preseason
mm-hmm.
talk, that he's kind of like wondering what was kind of going on with that, what did he look to accomplish from that. There was a noticeable difference in the zip on his ball, particularly off his back leg and his back foot as he was rolling out on those bootlegs or those naked boots. He had some pop on that balls that were a little different. I mean, a couple of balls thrown behind or that should have been thrown, a couple of balls thrown in front that were thrown behind, and you probably would have been looking at a much larger game as far as a win percentage or win was concerned. The other thing is I like the fact that teams are continuing to double-team Julio because what it's doing is it's forcing – him to go to other receivers. And just as you mentioned, I mean, he threw the ball to just about every receiver that was out there. And if he could continue to do that, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough because now teams going to have to pick their poison. So I was glad to see where the offense was going. I'm still a little concerned about some of the red zone plays. I mean, short of that wild deflected pass touchdown to Justin Hardy. I mean, you just don't see anything going on in the red zone that makes you wonder, oh, this is great play calling, or say, hey, these are great plays. So I am concerned about that, and the pass rush the same way. I mean, we just aren't getting any push at all on the edge, and I don't really know how they're going to be able to fix that anytime soon.
I would have to say one of the things that I said about Oakland, I told you that was one of the teams I said would be on the uprise. I think you have a different football game had Oakland not gone into overtime with New Orleans. They've gone to the
mm-hmm.
fourth quarter now. That's why I picked them. I felt that the game would be close, and if it came down to stretching it and possibly facing another overtime, Atlanta hadn't seen it as of yet. But again, Atlanta game playing well. Matt took the profit. Again, I think I agree with Reggie that as long as you're double teaming his number one, it forces him to look across the field at other options, other routes that he normally does not throw or doesn't want to throw. So I think after he went back and looked at the film, this is what's going to be the difference in him playing in New Orleans, because ball distribution in the passing game is very critical. And now it forces New Orleans to have to look at covering other receivers that they weren't accustomed to covering. So, yes, I still think that you see the double team on Julio. And the theory of the defensive coordinator is that you're not going to beat me with your guy. Beat me with everybody else. So now they have to rethink this, and they now have to cover all of these receivers now because, again, the distribution that Matt was forced to do says a lot. But now the question, and that's why I go back to what I said earlier in the segment, guys, that I'm looking to see how not only he commands the offense and demands the win through that same type of mentality. If you can't, how are you going to get it to Julio? You have to find a way to get that ball to him as well. So how are you going to do all this as well as look across the field, make the correct decisions, make the right throws, sustain the third downs? I want to see Atlanta come out and go first down, first down, first down without
finding themselves in a lot of third and longs and things of those nature. And if they do face some of those third and shorts, that Matt will not be afraid to go pick up 2 yards with his feet and say, we're not coming off this field until we score. So I like to see what's going to happen with that. But I think Oakland was a great test to see where he is now with ball distribution.
Absolutely. Would you guys agree that the Falcons needed that win?
Yes, I do. I definitely, I mean, just in what I was seeing on the sideline, there was a lot of jubilee. I mean, just a lot of celebrating going on. You saw even at times when they got down, when Matt threw the pickoff. One of the things I was telling Coach that I saw that was a little different, and I hadn't seen it in a while and been waiting on it, is a scenario where Matt came off the field and it's no longer him just going over in the corner with the OC, with Shanahan, kind of going over what they're seeing. He's actually going over with the receivers, and Shanahan's over there, and they're actually going through the formations that they're seeing now. So you're seeing a lot more interaction with him. He even when he threw the pick, he came over, and he's my fault, guys. You know, that's on me. And he's telling the offensive line that. He's telling the receivers that. So it's just a different in his leadership style so far. But I think they needed that just to validate to themselves. You know, they know they've already been written off as a 2 or 3, you know, win team at best by a lot of the experts. So I mean, they get to play without expectations. And that's a dangerous team. So we'll see.
Coach, would you say they needed that win?
Absolutely, they needed that win. When they have the toughest schedule, in my opinion, and not the second toughest schedule in the National Football League, that says a lot. This is a game that they were supposed to win when you look at their schedule. So with that being said, yes, Atlanta needed this. They needed that win. They needed to feel the games that they're supposed to win. So, yes, the win was necessary for them. Again, I am going to piggyback off what Reggie said earlier about the change in Matt's leadership, the fact that he is now coming over to the receivers. He wants to understand what they see. He's not isolating himself anymore. He's making himself more accessible as a quarterback to his team. So with that, I think the first time you see Matt ball up a fist, jump up and down, scream and run, that is what's going to ignite Atlanta. The first time you see him do something animated, that's what's going to take them and surprise a lot of people. I still feel Atlanta's probably going to win 9 games this year. I still feel they're a 9-10-game winning season. And that's what I see in them. The question is not what I see, it's what they're going to do. I do feel that they can come out of this with a winning season and find themselves over into the playoffs with ease, if not win the division.
I think that's definitely possible. I wouldn't go as far as saying the division yet, but like you said, it's, you know, what we believe will happen and what we're seeing currently are two different things currently. But yeah, I could definitely see them making a run because Carolina doesn't look all that strong this year.
No, I don't think Carolina's going to be back at all. I'd be surprised if Carolina makes the playoffs, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting fight. Go ahead, Jeremy. Sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say our producer just gave me the thumbs up that we do have that on record that Coach says Carolina's not gonna be in the playoffs, so we're gonna bring that back somewhere down the road. But I agree with it. Go ahead, Reggie.
No, I was just gonna say I echo Coach's statements about our ability to possibly win the division. I mean, it's really in their hands. I mean, they will have the road less traveled. I mean, they leave. We go to New Orleans Monday. You're back for Carolina. Then you're on the road at Denver and at Seattle. I mean, these next four games are going to really tell the tale on what we really got.
Oh, they can beat Seattle. At least right now they could. I don't think it'll look ridiculous. You know, it could be 31-10 or something like that, but that's a whole different story. Quick news and notes, because we already previewed Monday Night Football, and we know that I'm the lone wolf that will probably be wrong. They did bring back O'Brien Schofield. Julio had a calf injury, but it's not that serious. It's, I mean, folks, I say this to Atlanta fans all the time. Julio is always going to have some sort of leg or foot injury. It is not going to hinder anything he does. He always plays hurt. He's like Calvin Johnson. It's just part of the way he plays, so don't think much on it. Last thing I wanted to do, I wanted to throw in that Matt Ryan is the league leader in a handful of categories for quarterbacks this year, and he is also second in a handful of other ones, which I thought was really cool. But it brings up the debate based off the last two games. If you had to pick one, who would you guys take, Tevin Coleman or Devontae Freeman currently?
Currently, I gotta go with Coleman. Coleman has looked really good these last two games, and you know, but a lot of people have to remember Coleman was actually the projected starter when last season started. So it's not outside of the possibility that this guy is actually just as good, if not better, than Freeman is. It's just that, you know, Atlanta just so happened to have two good backs. And Freeman was able to do his thing, but I definitely say Coleman. I mean, Coleman's been looking his usual self, and I say his usual again because he was the starter last year.
All right, Coach, who would you take?
Absolutely, I would go with Coleman. I think he's a bigger back. He offers everything that you need in a starting back. I think the thing with Freeman is more of a gadget guy. I mean, he does some things well. He's gotten better at his pass pro and his blocking. But the problem that Freeman has is if he gets caught and they put his hands on him, he goes down a little too easy. The zone blocking helps free him up. But I just think when it comes down to durability and what you want to move forward with and just, you know, a three down back, I just think Coleman edges in there just because of size and he can do everything Freeman does.
Oh, absolutely. Right now, at least, I would take Coleman if for nothing else, catching passes out of the backfield. I believe he's been the leading receiver the past 2 weeks for the Falcons, especially in this scheme. They're actually using the Shanahan scheme the way it's supposed to be. Matt's rolling out. He's catching Tevin Coleman out of the backfield. He's using the tight ends up the seam, the home run ball to Sanu or to Julio. My dad's asked me the whole season, what is Shanahan's system actually supposed to be and supposed to look like? And I've been able to point at these two games and go, this is actually, when done correctly with the right personnel, what it's supposed to look like. And the scoring's been up.
Yeah, they've been up, but let's wait and see. I'm still in a wait and see mode. That red zone offense is still a little, you know, suspect to me right now. I mean, we're kicking way too many field goals, in my opinion. So, it's getting better, I must say. It definitely is a lot more fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's good to see the offense up. We're still waiting on that pass rush. We're still waiting on some other things with the defense. But compared to last year and kind of the year before that, it's kind of good to see Matt smile and actually look like a comparable quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's all the cylinders are clicking. And like Coach said, I think that one piece that's needed is he needs to, you know, show that he can put something on his shoulders and make a run for it and go get some yards if he has to.
Right.
I think that's what they're waiting to see. Show that fire again, you know. I think that's about it, you know, on offense, right? And if we can stay healthy, I tell you what, Alex Mack is worth his weight in gold, gentlemen. I mean, he's
right,
the epitome of how important an offensive lineman or center is. I mean, he is a mauler on that line, and you just feel so comfortable. I mean, there's no missed snaps. There's no any of that. I mean, he was definitely worth the price of admission.
Which brings up the thing I debated the other day with a big Falcons fan, not quite as big as you are, Reggie, but I told him if you really want to shore up this line, especially given the way things are playing out with this guy's team, now would be a great time to make a play for Taylor Lewan out of Tennessee, and you don't want to put him at tackle. Convert him, move him either to left guard or right guard, and this line would be like almost impenetrable.
Yeah, I could definitely agree with that. I especially considering that was actually something, you know, Taylor was on their list anyway. He was on their board at that point. I wouldn't have been happy with that pick as well. So yeah, I mean, I think they've got it going. I mean, the line of Matthews has been looking a little suspect here lately. I don't know if he's playing hurt or not.
Probably
he's been a little leaky and some penalties. If we could get Robert Alford to stop with some of the dumb penalties that he's been kind of going back and forth with, I think, you know, we're moving in the right direction. I mean, even with Tampa Bay, they kind of shot themselves in the foot with some of the dumb penalties. Raiders, Oakland game, you know, there was a pickoff that Robert Alford had where he had a pass interference. He didn't even have to push the guy. All he had to do was go get the ball, and we go the other way. And then the touchdown, you know, would-be touchdown pass, there was a turn interception by Matt Ryan. I mean, you look at some of these plays where they're beating themselves, and that's why I say, you know, they're going to surprise some teams, that's for sure. If they can clean up some of these mistakes, they're shooting themselves right now. It's not really the other team beating them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all we got on the sheet. You guys have anything you want to add?
I think I'm good, other than I'm watching these Georgia Tech guys not play like Clemson's playing by themselves.
Hey, they're not bad. They're only holding Clemson. They had a pretty good stop on the goal line a while ago, and they're only holding Clemson to 14 points in the first quarter. So that's kind of a win.
But they can't move the ball, that's for sure. So we'll see. It's going to be a long game, gentlemen.
All right, guys.
Well, then that's going to do it for us. So once again, want to thank you, Coach, and, of course, you as well, Reggie, for joining us on Falcon Zone. We'll see you guys next week. Go Falcons.
Clear without the bam. Yeah, okay. Bam! What?